All right, so I did forget to make your presentation group. Sorry about that. So I'll do that today, hopefully. So let's see. Let me remind you of a few things that we did last time. Okay, so we've been working on magnetism, and so the core thing that you can think of as analogous to Coulomb's law is the law of Biot-Savart. And instead of electric charges, I mean, there is no such thing as a magnetic charge per se, but what you do have are currents, and around currents you have magnetic fields. And so if you look at little links of the current and cross it into and if you have a point outside of a particular current and you want to calculate the field at that given point, then the vector from some segment of the current to that point is given by R, and dl cross r hat gives you the direction of the field contribution from that little differential piece of current. And it falls off as 1 over r squared, and you have to integrate over all the currents to get this. This, of course, can be a very hard problem. And so similar to what we've seen in electrostatics, where we have Gauss's law that makes it much more reasonable to calculate an electric field under certain conditions of symmetry, we have Ampere's law in magnetism. And this is Ampere's law. So instead of making up a Gaussian surface, you make up a closed curve in a plane, something that looks like this. It doesn't have to be a circle, but very often that is a useful geometry to use. Ampere's law is, again, always true, but this also can be hard to calculate. This is an integral of the magnetic field dotted into the little arc length differential vectors as we go all the way around this loop. So you can imagine in an arbitrary magnetic field that integral is going to be quite hard. But again, under conditions of certain symmetry, namely where you have chosen a curve on which B is constant and where this dot product is reasonable, is either 0 or it's just B times dS, then this side is reasonable. And very often the problem is set up so that you can then calculate, this is mu 0 times I enclosed, where I enclosed basically would be those currents that, if you thought of them as wires and tried to pull on the loop, would get caught by that wire. Okay, those are the currents that actually penetrate through the curve. And they can penetrate either way, so you'll see problems where you actually have to define a direction of penetration. So if you want to define I enclosed as positive going this direction through the curve, then one that comes through the other way will have to add in a negative way when you're calculating I enclosed. Okay? And then Ampere's law problems basically boil down to recognizing the geometry, and I'm going to do a long example with one in a minute. So any questions on that stuff? Okay, so we then looked at an example which is sort of the magnetic equivalent of the parallel plate system that we used in electrostatics. In this case, it's a solenoid, so just picture a slinky. And the solenoid has n loops per unit length, and while it is true it's like a spring in terms of its coil, for a given length, you'll count so many of these loops in the spring. So you can think of them as all identical current loops with the same current going through in the same direction if you want. So here's the solenoid, and to analyze this solenoid, we basically cut it in half, you know, from top to bottom, right through the middle, and we see the current coming out at us in successive loops up above and going into the board in successive loops going at the bottom. Okay, it's the same current, actually. It's just going around and around and around. If you look at the magnetic field for each of these particular current loops, for this one that's coming out at you, grab the wire, put your thumb along the direction of current, and you'll see the field is rotating counterclockwise. So that's this pink line. And of course, it continues to do that all the way out, like so. This one beside it, same thing, but it's centered at this point instead of that point. And on we go. They all have the same field configuration. So by symmetry, if I choose any one of these, and I consider the field at some point due to that particular wire, if you can imagine, I do it where I'm pointing the green laser pointer right now. If I consider this wire, the field will actually be going up a little bit here. But by symmetry, there'll be a piece over here where there'll be a wire over here where the current will be going down. That's the same distance away. And so the up and down piece of these current contributions, or the field contributions at that point, are going to cancel. And you're going to be left with something that's only moving from right to left up above this line of currents that are coming out at you. Okay? Down below, you, by the same symmetry argument, you'll have a field that is going from left to right. If you look at the field that is due to the wires here at the bottom, as they go through the paper, you will have a field going from left to right by the same symmetry argument above them, and from right to left by the same symmetry argument beneath them. And now, these fields by symmetry will all be the same magnitude. And we can actually use Amperian loop. This time it's not a circle. So just like in Gauss's law, the Gaussian surface could be any shape, right? The Gauss's law is still true. You have to choose the shape that solves the problem that you want to solve if that's practical and can be done. All right. In this case, with the symmetry of this problem, it makes sense to choose a Gaussian loop that looks like this rectangle. And now B is both constant. If we just consider the field due to the line of currents up above, if we choose the Amperian loop to be the same distance above and below, by symmetry, the field here magnitude is going to have to be the same as the magnitude here, and it's going to be a long ds here if we integrate around the loop, Amperian loop, counterclockwise, and it will be a long ds here. B dot ds is zero here because B is going from right to left or left to right, and ds has got to be up and down. It's got to be going up here and down here. So the dot product in B dot ds is going to be zero on the two sides. So we get 2 times the magnitude of B times ds. And we integrate over ds, so we get a length L. So we get 2 times B times L for the left-hand side of Ampere's law. And then how much current penetrates through that loop? Well, if I have a loop that's L long, and I have n turns per unit loop, then I'm going to have mu 0 times n times L, so this is n turns per unit length times the length times the current that's being held. And that'll give you the total current that is penetrating through this Amperian loop. So then you can find a relation for B, which is mu 0 n times I over 2. And it doesn't matter what this distance was. So because this is an infinite solenoid, it's telling you that the field is uniform and to the left up above, uniform to the right down below for the wires up right here, and then for the wires down here, it's uniform and to the right and uniform to the left above and below, respectively. So the pink field here cancels out with the blue field here if you're down below these wires on the bottom. The pink field here cancels with the blue field here up above the wires on the top. It's only in the middle here where the two fields actually add together. So the field in this region, in the interior piece of the solenoid, the inside of the pipe, is going to have 2 times this field. So it's just going to be mu 0 times n times I. It only depends on the current and the density of the loops. Okay? So we have this situation, just like we have between parallel plates in the electric system, where we have this nice uniform and well-known field that's basically dictated just by the geometry and the amount of charge in electrostatics, or the amount of current that we have in magnetism. You okay with that? Yes.
I have a question. So you said that there are components that cancel, so we don't consider them. And then just the inside the school, like the pink one going to the right and the blue one going to the right, that's our magnetic field, right? But what about the ones on top? That...
Well, this blue field continues all the way up, right?
Yeah.
This pink field continues all the way up. The magnitudes are the same, but they're in opposite directions. So when you're outside of, when you're up here or out here, or if you think about the full geometry, you have this pipe. When you're outside, those fields just cancel by symmetry and by the fact that it's a vectorial field and the directions are opposite. Okay? All right. We have no projector. Boy, that really annoys me. Okay, so we don't actually have an overhead projector. Don't know why. So, let me do a couple of these. Let me just sort of check that you're getting something very that you can expect on the test and you just want to be able to get, because you just can't be messing this up. It's too simple, but nevertheless it's easy to mess up. So let's suppose that we have a proton like a positive charge that is moving in direction V, and we have a magnetic field that is given by the axis, so it's into the board, all right? And what I'd like to know is whether it is the force is up, down, forward, which means toward you, backward, into the board, or right, or left. All right, so decide which direction you think it is. All right, close your eyes. All of those who think it is up, all of those who think it is down, all of those who think it is forward, all of those who think it's backwards, right, left. All right, good. So everybody got that, which is the way I want it. That's good, because it means you guys know your right from your left. That's always good. All right, let's try it a different way. Let's say that we have a uniform B going down, and now we have an electron coming out at you with velocity V. Good with that? All right, close your eyes. All that think it is up, down, forward, backward, right, left. Okay. So I got a few of you on that one. V is coming out at you. Pick your right hand. V is coming out at you. Curl it into B. The velocity is going, the V is coming toward you. So let's see, V cross B. So you get a force going that way, but it's an electron, not a positive charge, so you flip it. Yeah, nasty. Okay? Just expect it though, right? I mean, so. All right. Let's do a different one. Let's say I have a current here and another current going this way, same magnitude. The force between the wires is zero, attractive or repulsive? All right, close your eyes. You think it's zero. Do you think it is attractive? Do you think it is repulsive? Okay, put your hands down. There were a number of hands that went up for attractive, a larger number for repulsive. Consider the force of the top wire on the bottom wire. The nature of the force is going to be magnetic. So you consider that the field produced by the current on the top, use the right-hand rule, put my thumb along the current. The field circulates in such a way that up above that wire it's coming out at you, down beneath where this wire happens to be, it is going into the board. Okay? So now we have a current here on the bottom that is moving in a magnetic field that is going into the board. So you're going to have positive charges, because that's the convention for current unless you're told otherwise. All right. QV is going that way. Cross B, which is into the board, gives you a force down. And you can look at it the other way. The field of the bottom wire is circulating such that it's going into the board where the top wire is. V for the top wire going this way, curl it into B, which is into the board, gives you a force up. Better, because Newton's laws still work, so you have the repulsive force. Okay? All right. Meant to be straightforward. Let's try one more. Let's suppose that we have a table surface of some form, and I have a wire that is laid out on the table flat, but it's in this weird sort of shape, and let's say that it has a current that goes like this, and let us assume that there is no friction between this wire and the table surface. So your choices are, at time equals zero, the current is as shown, and this flexible loop, this wire that is flexible, is as shown. In a few moments later, nothing happens. The wire arranges itself into a taut circle. The wire will arrange itself sort of into this sort of shape. Okay, sort of try to stretch out as far as it can in some direction. Or four, the wire will sort of just all jumble up. Okay. Okay, close your eyes. All of those who think it does nothing. All of those who think it turns into a circle. Into a sort of a line shape. And gets all jumbled up. All right. So, there were answers for all four of them. Most hands went up for number two. Let's think about it. Consider I have a current going from right to left right here, and just sort of imagine how the field due to that little piece of wire is going to be. It's going to be circulating this way. So at this point, it's going to be going into the table. I have a current going from left to right at the point where that's happening, where the field due to this piece is going into the table. So that current curled into B gives me a force outward. So what's going to happen is basically these are just like those two wires with opposite currents. You're going to end up with a force that's repulsive between this point and that point. Now things are all jumbled up here a little bit, so it isn't totally obvious, right? You're going to have some strangeness in places like this, but overall you're going to have the thing is sort of circulating, right? So you're going to end up with this net force pulling these sides away, and it will quickly rearrange into a taut circle. All right? Any questions on any of these? All right, so what I'd like to do is a little bit tedious. I always have mixed feelings about doing this, but it's a complicated Ampere's law problem, and it has enough in it that it gives you a lot of clues as to a lot of guidance on how to solve many types of these problems. So I'm going to go ahead and do it. So what I'd like to imagine is that you have some sort of coaxial cable. And you'll hear the problems will typically say a long cable. By a long cable, they mean you don't need to worry about something breaking the azimuthal symmetry of the problem. I mean, that's what it says when it says long. If it's a little short, stubby cable, then you've got issues because you're going to have the symmetry is going to be broken if you get away from the midpoint of the cable. So you have a cable that looks something like this, where we're going to assume I is uniform across both inner and outer conductors. Okay, and what we've got is a conducting shell or a conducting pipe-like shape, thick pipe-like shape here, and a conductor here, and we're going to assume that we have a current I that comes from right to left along the inner conductor, and you have the same magnitude of current going from left to right along the outer conductor, but that this current is spread across the cross section of these current of these conductors. So in the first one, the current is coming out, but it's spread throughout that cross section uniformly. On the outer one, it's this thick pipe, and it's going in, but it's spread throughout that pipe. Okay, not inside the pipe, but in the region where the pipe surface,
the metal
of the pipe, if you want to think of it that way, because you've cut the pipe open. So this is conductor, and this is conductor. You say, but wait a minute, I thought charge always resides on the outside of a conductor. This isn't a net electric static charge. This is current. So the net charge in this conductor could very well be zero. Okay, that's not a problem. It's just the current is moving. So this is the same problem. It's just what we're doing. This is sort of the view from the side, a little bit from the side. And here it is. You're looking straight at it. And in this case, we're going to say that the current is coming out at you on the inner piece, and it's going into the board on the outer piece. And we're going to specify this radius to be little a, this radius to be little b, and this radius to be little c. And the problem is to find B in all space with this long coaxial cable and nothing else in the universe existing. Okay. You all right with this? Any questions on the setup? Okay. So bear that in mind. This now is, you use much of the same sort of mental procedure that you use with Gauss's law problems. You have regions where the symmetry of the problem is going to be similar. Everything is going to be the same. So inside radius A, you're basically going to be in a region where everything is going to look the same mathematically. In this region between A and B, it will all look the same. And in this region, it will all look the same. And in this region, it's all going to look the same. So you've got four different regions in this problem, okay? And I'm going to start from the inner region and work my way out. So let's first start with, actually, maybe I can do this. That sort of works. Okay. What I'd like to do, let's consider the region where the radius is going to be less than little a. So you're going to be inside this this inner conductor. And by the symmetry of the problem, B is going to have only a radial dependence. And if we imagine what's happening here, you've got a current coming out at you, B is going to circulate one direction or the other everywhere. So B is going to be on the surface of the annular rings, okay, and it's going to be along tangential to those annular rings, one direction or another, wherever you go. So the symmetry of this problem is such that you want to choose an Amperian loop that looks like this. Which has a radius of R, which is less than A. All right? And if we look just along that loop, so here it is with radius R, the magnetic field, the current is coming out at you. We only need to worry about the current that is enclosed. So it's not a total I because I is spread through this whole thing, but there will be some current coming through the middle of this loop, and it is coming out at you. So by the right-hand rule, you're going to see that field due to that loop is going to circulate around in this counterclockwise direction. So B everywhere is going to be doing this, tangential to the loop. All right. So what we can do is do the integral of B dot ds around the circle, because we're going to do Ampere's law for this loop. If I consider a little ds like so, and I now integrate, if I do this integral around this loop, b dot ds, they're always in the same direction, so that becomes b times ds. B is going to be of the same magnitude everywhere around this curve if it's all at one fixed radius by symmetry of the problem. So that means b dot ds becomes the integral of b times ds. B is a constant, so b pulls out of the integral, and you're just doing the integral of ds around this circle, which is just the circumference of the circle, 2 pi r. So by the judicious choice of the right Amperian loop, we can do the left-hand side nicely. So this becomes the integral of b times ds from 0 to 2 pi r, and that's b times 2 pi r, and that's going to be equal to mu 0 times I enclosed. Now the problem is getting I enclosed, okay? Because what you're given is I and the fact that I is distributed uniformly. So now we have to sort of invent something we haven't seen before, which is we're going to invent a current density, which is coming out at you, right? It's how much current per unit cross-section is coming out at you. So the current density is generally given the symbol small j. It's going to be a function of radius. In this case, it's going to be uniform through the thing, but this is where I can make the problems harder, right? I can give you a current density that has a radial function and force you to do an integral here and not think your way through this quite as quickly. This is what we'll define as the current density. And in this particular case, it just happens to be constant here, okay? So what that means is that the current density is going to be equal to the total current in this cross-sectional piece coming out at you, I, divided by the cross-sectional area, because it's an area density. So this is going to be I divided by pi little r, I'm sorry, the current is spread through the whole cross-section coming out at you on this inner conductor. So it's I divided by pi a squared, because it's the total cross-sectional area. You with that? Because that's where some of you are going to screw up on the test. I mean, I guarantee you, that's where we see it, okay? I draw the Amperian loop in here. You need to know how much current is penetrating through that loop, all right? But to get that, what you're going to have is the current density. In this case, I don't give you the current density. I give you the total current and tell you it's uniform. So you can find the current density by taking that total current and dividing it by the total cross-sectional area that current is spread around, and that is this entire circle. So that's why this I is divided by the pi a squared. Don't put the r here. That's the way to screw up. Okay, that's a very common way to blow this. Okay, but if current density is uniform, the amount of current through this small circle is going to be that current density times the cross-sectional area of that Amperian loop. So I enclosed is going to be equal to the integral of J dA from 0 out to R. That's going to be the integral of 0 to R of J times the way to do a circular integral is to imagine a little annular ring of dr, and it's 2 pi r dr, and then you integrate from 0 to r. So this is going to be J times 2 pi r dr, which you know to be just pi r squared, of course. So this is J times pi r squared. This case, because it's a uniform current density, you can basically write down the answer here. It's going to be J times 2 pi r. I'm sorry, J times pi r squared, okay? But if J has a radial dependence, okay, if I make J change as you go out in r, then you have to do this integral carefully. All right, that's the other place where I'll get you. All right, so J pi r squared is the answer here, and J, we know, is going to be I over pi a squared. So this is I times r squared over a squared. And that's the total I enclosed. So from that, we can then calculate the magnetic field by going back up here. Okay, we can now put in what I enclosed is. So I enclosed is going to be I times r squared over a squared. So B, the magnitude of B for r less than a is going to be equal to mu 0 times I times r over 2 pi a squared. And then you have to, within the way the problem is set up, you would then say then the direction would be, in this case, it'll be counterclockwise according to the drawing that we have. So, are you okay with that? Yes?
If you were to give us a J that was radially dependent, would you just give us the equation for J and we'd have to integrate it, or would you say the density is proportional to R and we'd have to figure out what J would be?
I could do any of the above. I mean, I would have to, it would have to be consistent within the problem, but a conventional way to do this would be, in this problem it says J is constant and uniform and gives you I, which from which you can calculate what J is, okay? I could give you I and tell you that J has a dependence as 1 over r squared, in which case you would have to calculate the coefficient or whatever. I could just tell you that J goes as some constant times r squared. And I mean, so there's, it's very similar to Gauss's law problems, right, where I have to specify the charge distribution as a function of radius. Oops, that I didn't want to do. So now what I want to do is to consider the, we just calculated as a function of radius the field in this region, okay, for r less than a. I'm now going to go to the next region out, which is between a and b. So if we go to a is less than r is less than b, now what we have basically is a full current I that's inside an Amperian loop. So we want to put the Amperian loop right in the middle in the region that we're considering. Where R satisfies this constraint, okay? And now we just use Ampere's law, integral of B dot ds around the loop is equal to mu zero times I enclosed. The right-hand part now is easy because the current that goes through the loop is just I. So this is mu zero times I. The left-hand side is really similar to what we just did, because the symmetry is all the same. So this becomes B dot ds, becomes B times ds. B is constant at this fixed r, so you pull B out, and you get B times 2 pi r, where r is the radius of the Amperean loop. So we have B times 2 pi r is equal to mu 0 I enclosed, or B magnitude is equal to mu 0 I over 2 pi r. And again, it's going to be clockwise. I'm sorry, counterclockwise. You okay with that? All right, so it's a lot easier when you've got, I mean, just like if all the charge is inside the Gaussian loop, Gaussian surface, it's easy to sum it up, and you know that that's the only piece that you have to worry about. The stuff that's outside the Gaussian surface doesn't contribute. Here, the current that is outside that doesn't penetrate through this loop, you don't have to worry about. Now what I want to do is consider the next part, which is in here. So if we want to now look at R, which is greater than B, but less than C, then the Amperean loop is here. Okay. So we start out with Ampere's law. The integral of B dot ds is equal to mu 0 times I enclosed. The left-hand side, everything's the same, right? The symmetry's all the same. Geometry's basically the same. So we have B times 2 pi r is equal to mu 0 times I enclosed. But now we've got an issue, because I enclosed is a bit different now. We have this full I coming out at you, and then we have some fraction of this I going back in. And the fraction that we have is the fraction that's inside that Amperean loop. So it's really only this piece right here that is going back in. And that's determined by your radius r. So what you want to worry about is this piece. Right? These are the pieces of current that you have to consider. All right, so the inside is easy because it's just current I coming out at you, and we'll just call that a positive I. It's the outer piece that's more difficult. What we know is that we have a full current I that is spread uniformly on that cross-section. So that would be the current density on the outer piece is constant. That we know from given that. And that's going to be the total current I. I'm going to call it negative because it's going the other direction, and I've sort of been thinking positive coming out at you. So I'll call it minus. We know it's the total current, and it's got to be That total current is spread over this entire region. So the area there is going to be pi c squared minus pi b squared. Right? That's sort of the area of the pipe metal that you would see, that surface. You follow me with that? Okay. So now, the I enclosed on the outer conductor. So now what I want to do is, taking this current density, I want to ask how much I do I have in this yellow region. And that's going to be the current density times the area of that yellow region. So it's going to be minus I over pi c squared minus pi b squared. So that's the current density. Now it's times this total area of the yellow, which is going to be pi r squared minus pi b squared. Okay? So now we can pull it all together that b in this outer region, for b is less than r is less than c, is going to be equal to mu 0 over 2 pi r times I enclosed. Total I enclosed is going to be I coming out at you minus the I that's going in, which is this stuff from the outer conductor. So it's going to be minus I times pi r squared minus pi b squared over pi c squared minus pi b squared. Okay, and now the direction, by the way this problem is set up, you have the current coming out at you, you have the full current here, and you don't get the full current going in until you get all the way out to the outer radius for this region that we're talking about, which means you're always going to have a net current that is coming out at you. So in fact, even though you have currents going both directions, in this particular problem, you know that the field has to be going counterclockwise in this region. You with me? And then the last region that we have to consider is the region out here. But out there, the total current enclosed is going to be zero because you have current coming out at you of current coming out at you of magnitude I. You have current going in of magnitude I. Those two will cancel out. So the current enclosed is going to be zero, which means that the field has to be zero. So for R greater than C, this is zero, which means this is zero too, okay? That's one of the advantages of a coaxial cable. If you have the same current going in, going one direction as you do the other direction, it means there's no magnetic field outside of the cable. So if you find that you are having problems with, I guess we call it noise in an electronic circuit. I mean, what happens is that as you move currents around, these currents will cause effects on charges and cause other currents in other places in your circuit, and this can give you a lot of extraneous crap going on that you don't want going on. And so a way around that is, where you can, you use these nice shielded little coaxial cables, because they don't talk to other things very well. Yeah?
So for the problem, we assume that those two currents, the one that was going in and out, they were the same in magnitude?
Yeah, I called them both current. I gave them both the same symbol, I. Well, I mean, I could have called them different currents. I mean, I could have given you different magnitudes or something, and then it becomes a little harder problem knowing what the direction is in the region, and it would be non-zero on the outside, yeah. Yep.
What about for R equals A, B, and C?
You might have inflection points, but the magnitudes have to match. So that means that at R equals C, for example, right as you reach that radius, the total current you have going one direction and the total current you have going the other direction is zero. So the field goes to zero right at that outer edge. As you go in, then it will match the field of the other region. So you'll have matching at those particular radii, but the slope will change. I mean, because we can look at that, maybe. Okay. There it is. If we look at the behavior of this thing, let's imagine that we're going to plot the radius, the field as a function of the radius, the magnitude of the field as a function of the radius. Then on the inner region, we have it growing linearly with R. So let's say we grow linearly with R all the way out to R equal to A. And then when we get into the middle region between the two conductors, we have it dropping off as 1 over R. So now you're starting to drop off as 1 over R, but maybe not that much. All right, you're dropping off as 1 over R. You have the same amount of current enclosed, but you're getting a little further away and further away, right? So if it were just an infinite wire, if it were just a little segment of current, it would drop off as 1 over R squared. But because it's an infinite wire, you end up with this 1 over R behavior. Yeah?
Just 1 over R for the wire magnitude?
Yeah. And that's...
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it's a bunch of constants. Okay, so that determines, you know, the speed with which it's dropping off, really. The size of this current really does. But the behavior goes as 1 over R, and so this is a qualitative plot I'm making. Oh, did I say that? Okay, sorry. So, it's going to drop to a level which is going to be mu 0 I over 2 pi B by R equal B. So it'll drop to that exact point. The other one will grow this magnitude is going to be mu 0 I over 2 pi A. All right, so they'll reach the same values. And then when you get inside that third region, so you're inside here, as a function of radius, it's complicated. We have a 1 over R piece with this sort of quadratic piece subtracting from it. So, set the Yeah. So you're dropping, because you're getting further away from the inner piece, it continues to drop as 1 over R, but now you're adding current going the other way, so it's going to drop even faster with an R squared component. So I don't know how to draw that. So we'll do something like this, and then when you get to the outside, it goes all the way to 0. So complicated. But you'll get to 0 by the time you get to this is B, this is C, okay? And then you're 0 forever. Yes?
If you had like a Faraday cage around a wire and you ran current through it, would it induce current in the cage?
The answer is yes. It will induce. It will do something. Why don't we come back to that after we're in well into this next topic that I'm going to start? Okay. Because I have to sit down and even think exactly what would happen with it. But yes, you will get stuff happening in that wire. Okay. And so, actually, that is a really good segue into the next topic. So, thanks for asking that. The question really is, if I have a current that has a magnetic field, what does it do to the wire around it? Okay. So, what I'd like to do is, I have a wire in a circle. And I have a magnetic field, okay? And I have this wire loop all connected to a voltmeter. There's no battery here, okay? There's no generator. It's just a voltmeter that's sitting there very nice and quiet, okay? And now I'm going to take a magnet and do my Jedi saber thrust into this. And if it's holding still, nothing happens. But when it changes, look what happens. Ooh, that's good. So note that if I have it oriented this way, I'm going from out to in, and it went that way. Then I go from in to out, it goes this way. So out to in went like that, and then it went back this way. Now I'm going to flip this around, so the field is going to change the other way. Now it went this way first, and now it's going back that way. So it cares about the direction, and it doesn't seem to care that there's a magnetic field in here. Okay, it doesn't care that the field is there. What it cares about is if that field is changing. Right? And this is pretty weird stuff, right? There's no battery in this, but a changing magnetic field is inducing an EMF in this loop. Okay? I have here a coil of wire connected across a small power supply. So there's a little loop of wire, it's a lot of loops of wire. So there will be a magnetic field coming through this thing, all right? And it should be constant. So if I just put this on top of it and it's electrically insulated, all I have is just a wire loop, okay? and I have lots of wire loops here. All it's basically like a slinky. It's all carrying the same current. But as you know, if I take a wire and I put it in a loop, I'll get a field through it, okay? And actually, at the moment, there is no field in here because there's no current because the switch is broken, okay? But now I'm going to throw the switch. The instant I throw the switch, I'm going to be shoving current through this loop. And when I do, I'll be going from a magnetic field of zero to whatever the magnetic field is of this big wire loop. You okay with that? All right. Watch the voltmeter when I do that. Was that exciting or what? All right. Now I have a field. The current is all connected. There's a constant field here. And the voltmeter doesn't care. Right? There's no EMF induced. There's nothing happening in this wire. But if I break the current, I will be going from some field back down to zero. And when I do, notice when I establish the field, this thing goes like that. And when I break the field, it goes the other way. So again, it cares about the changing magnetic field, and the direction is important. Okay? So we call this an induced EMF. So why do you care? Let me just sort of put that out there. Do you care? Should you care? I'm going to answer this one. All right, why do you care? You know that if I have a current, I'll get a magnetic field around it, right? So if I have a handful of charge, okay, and I wiggle it. When I wiggle this charge, I'm creating, it's a current, I'll create a magnetic field in the space around it. What you just saw was a changing magnetic field induces an EMF. Right? But what's an EMF? In these wires, it's like an electric field in the wire. But the wire doesn't actually have to be there. If I have a changing magnetic field in space, it induces an EMF in that space, which is as if I were wiggling charge, which induces the magnetic field in the space around it, which induces an EMF in the space around it. And this whole thing propagates out at the speed of light. And that's what light is. You'd look dubious. I mean, we're about to do it mathematically. It'll take us a little while to get there, but that's what Maxwell's equations tell you. That's what it's all about. Okay? So when you go to the time dependence of these things, what we're going to find with Maxwell's equations is we get coupled equations where if you have a changing electric field, it induces a changing magnetic field. But that should make sense, right? Because you know if you have a current, you get a magnetic field. If I shove more current in there, I get a stronger field. So clearly, a changing electric field will induce a magnetic field. What you just saw was a changing magnetic field induces an electric field, because that's what's inducing this EMF. And these two things just are self-coupled. They're like coupled differential equations. You end up with coupled wave equations where you have a changing E that induces a changing B, which induces the changing E, and this whole thing propagates out at the speed of light. Okay? Is that cool? You got to admit, that's sort of cool. Okay, but we're going to get there. Okay, but that's why you should give a shit. So, in fact, okay, so we call this thing magnetic induction. And, this is where electromagnetism actually starts to be a lot of fun. I mean, if you've had fun up till now, I'm glad for you. But where I'm concerned, this is the point where it really starts to be fun. So, in about the 1830s, Michael Faraday, if you always wondered where Farad came from, it's this dude. Okay, he's in England. And Joseph Henry in the U.S., they noticed that if you were to take pretty much what we just did, something very similar, but you could take, I'm going to use a symbol here, an EMF that's changing, okay? So a battery, something's changing the EMF. And you basically, through this changing EMF, you're changing the current in this loop. When you do that, you're going to change the magnetic field in that loop, clearly, right? And that changing magnetic field then will speak, if you have a nearby loop, and you want to put an ammeter in it, this nearby loop doesn't have a battery in it. Right? But if I have this loop, if I have a current in this loop, it creates a magnetic field in the space around it, which means it's creating a magnetic field that's going through this loop over here. If I change this current, I am changing that magnetic field, and as you just saw, a changing magnetic field will induce an EMF in here, and it will actually cause a current to flow in that other circuit. And you can actually measure it with your ammeter. Okay? So, and we call this magnetic induction. And so the whole phenomenon is a changing magnetic field induces a changing electric field. All right. So what I want to do is to get quantitative with it. So if we have magnetostatics, then we have steady currents and nothing is changing. And we've actually already looked at this. So for example, in Kirchhoff's laws, the sum of the potentials that you go around any closed loop is equal to zero. So what that really means is that, remember what potential is, if you're going, is it's the integral of E dot dl, right? Because the electric field is the change in potential over distance. So this is the integral of E dot dl is equal to zero as you go around a closed loop. And if you imagine, I mean, in Kirchhoff's law, we have a particular loop, all right? But if we want to rewrite it, we can talk about Kirchhoff's law in free space. And it's basically this form. And all you're saying is if I take a curve, a closed curve in free space with no changing magnetic fields, then the integral of E dot dl is going to be zero. And what I'd like to do now is to look at it in the situation where we have a changing magnetic field. And by this, I mean changing in time. In this case, the integral of E dot dl going around a closed loop, we've already seen that it depends on how the magnetic field is changing. So we're just going to say that this goes as minus d phi m over dt, where phi m is the magnetic flux. So it's the integral of B dot dA through the loop. And this is a strange sort of quantity because it's basically the electric field you measure as you go around the loop. And so we're going to call this the induced EMF. Okay? And the magnetic flux you would calculate just like you're calculating electric flux through a loop. You do not have to have a wire, and that's the magic in this. This can happen in a vacuum, and that's where the fun happens, right? Because I wiggle a charge, I get an induced current around it and a changing magnetic field in the space around it, which induces an EMF in that space, a changing EMF. And it's that self-coupling between the changing EMF and the changing B that gives you the fun in Maxwell's equations in light. Okay, so that's where we're headed. But we're going to have to take a break now, and I'll get to quantitative problems with induction, etc. So, see you Thursday.